the sponsor bit. Do you want to do that bit? Are we recording, Jamie? Yeah, wonderful. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Outlawed Picks podcast. We have Vortex as our sponsor this week.
Yes.
The food is delicious. At the Athlete Factory in Chester, we went to see Paul Reed, who is a man of many, many talents and has lots of knowledge. But he's set up a meal prep company.
Yeah.
Who are going to be providing stuff for your training camp. And the food is amazing. I had Cajun chicken yesterday with some kind of creamy cheese, pasta sauce and spinach and broccoli. What was yours?
It's like buffalo chicken with noodles and vegetables.
I was a little bit jealous. I didn't get to try it, if I'm honest. But it was amazing. So make sure you check them out. What's the website? You've got the website pulled up?
Yes, combatsportperformance.org. So what they do is they can do like several things for you. Like if you don't know what weight class you want to go to and you're unsure, you can go and book in a DEXA scan and they can check your resting metabolic rate and all that stuff. This is something that I did before the last camp just to see where I'm at, what calories I need per day. And it's just so structured to how everything is from how you lose weight. So if you do their NCC program, you can do it from, you know, you don't have to be in Chester to
you
go
have it on
and
your
do
phone,
it.
Don't
yeah,
you?
I have it on my phone. And then that gets programmed in and, you know, Paul's the best, man.
He
you can
awesome,
message
yeah.
him at any time and he's super dedicated. So it's just like I've trained with a lot of coaches and I feel like I've trained with them. And with Paul is like, it's a pleasure to have been allowed the opportunity to be trained by him.
He's very good. But the meal prep, we've just picked up a week's worth for this week, haven't we?
Yeah,
so what, you got two meals and a snack every day?
Yes.
Amazing. Really, really good food. Delicious. Smells great. I'm just eating regular food and smelling the stuff that you're cooking, and I'm a little bit jealous.
Yeah, so even though I get meal prep, I still have to prep meals for you.
Oh, what? You don't have to?
Oh,
you don't
come
have to,
on.
No.
What are you going to have? Ketchup beans on one sliced bread?
Have you ever heard anybody call beans
what
on toast
they?
Ketchup beans?
What are they?
Beans. They're beans.
Uh-huh.
In
what
a tomato sauce?
Sauce. Okay, ketchup.
Ketchup.
That is watery ketchup sauce. There is nothing else. Look,
it doesn't taste
like
ketchup.
I like beans, those ketchup beans. I love them. They're great for, you know, in the breakfast and stuff. But to have a, and I'm just going to get so many British people be mad at me, but it's okay because I know that's the only thing you know how to make.
you're like, set it up apologetically to call names on the national dish of beans on toast. And then you just followed through with a cross hook cross.
Oh my God.
Just finishing shot.
How many times
shot?
Have you and your dad said that, like, oh, like I can do it. It's simple. You shouldn't have mushy carbs on mushy carbs. No.
Hey.
I'm against it.
It works.
Mushy ketchup sauce. No. We got so off track.
Got me
anyway.
Through training camps. Got me through training
like,
camps.
One of the good things about the meal prep thing is that they have this crazy machine called like Chill Freeze. So at
That's
first,
what you need. You need some Chill Freeze. I need to put you in that machine.
Be quiet.
Yeah, it freezes the food. The food is cooked. It is as it would be on the plate as it comes out
yeah,
of the
but
kitchen.
Like instantly.
And then it just like Ice Age. Like it.
It's shoo. Crazy.
Yeah.
Like Pompeii when they're kissing.
Pompeii. No, that was ash. It doesn't turn the food to ash. That's
yeah,
the wrong thing. It's too much heat. That's too much heat.
But you get the reference.
Yeah, absolutely. Freezes it instantaneously. Ice Age was better. What was that movie,
oh,
Jamie?
No, Star Wars tomorrow. With the Han Solo guy.
The what?
What do you mean, the what?
Oh, no, what was it we were watching? Is it on Ahsoka with the guy with the... Who's the guy with the ice that we've just...
That was some kung
anyway,
fu
look.
Movie.
Oh,
listen,
it was.
We need
it
to
was.
Get into
it. Was. It's you that's taking us off
Check
tangents.
Out combat, what is it? Combatsportsperformance.org. Honestly, if you are, man.
If you're sick of ketchup beans.
No, like as an athlete, I cannot recommend him enough because his first priority is your safety. It's not him, you know, trying out some crazy new YouTube video strength conditioning that he saw. He doesn't care about that. He cares about you being safe, you not getting injured, and you going out there. So it's, yeah, stop Instagram SNCing and get yourself someone good.
Okay. Now can we crack on?
Okay.
Okay.
You kept distracting
You wrote the
me.
Testimonial last week. You've just read the whole thing out again.
Well, people need to understand.
No, he's very, very good. And the food is incredible. Okay. So we're going to do main card because we're busy doing other things. You've obviously got a fight coming up. Training camp's going well. It's very fun. We've been going over to Renegade, which is excellent.
Yes.
Leon Edwards' knowledge is incredible, and he is very, very generous with his time, as well as Fabian as well. I mean, he had a great performance against Eblin. Didn't go his way in the end, but he was back in the gym a few days later on the mats, coaching, just a really, really good vibe. And Joby Clayton is a Jedi of the striking arts. So
plus
that's been a really
so
good
funny.
Gym. He is very funny.
Oh my goodness, he's so funny.
Soon we're going to visit the guys at GB Top Team. Which brings me on to my first point, Nathaniel Woods on this card against Mohamed Naimov.
Yes.
We're not going to cover the whole card, but there are a couple of fights I do want to talk a little bit about. Like, Nathaniel Woods had some really bad luck. Like, that knee injury that he had where he cut his knee open on, you know, in the gym.
Yeah.
He's just had some bad luck. But in his last couple of fights, he seems to have really kind of settled into a style that suits him. Like, more elusive, more footwork, more strategic about how he's attacking his opponent and switching his stance. I don't know a lot about Naimov, but I'm just excited to see Nathaniel Wood back in there because I know how unfortunate he is. He's been of late.
Plus, it's a short notice match for Nathaniel Wood.
Yeah,
and he recently got married, so congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, of course, Naimov's coming off that win over Jamie Mullarkey.
Yeah. What I find like really cool about Nathaniel Wood is why I feel that. I feel like he's settled into the weight class because, mm-hmm. of course, he went up a weight class and he's not, you know, he's not the tallest fighter.
Yeah.
And if you're going up in a weight class, unless somebody has seen you half die dehydrating.
God, he was
and
so
it's like,
lean, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Do you remember that photo he posted where he looked like he's like a roadmap of veins?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah.
And that was before dehydration.
Yeah. And he's got, you know, experience advantage here, 19-5 against 9-2.
Yeah. He has solid footwork, great little trips.
Yeah.
Where you're in front of him and he's like trading shots with you and you're thinking about something and then he throws a trip or a leg entanglement in, not like an Imanari roll. I mean like a leg hook, like judo type.
Yeah. He's very, very good. It's a lot of fun to watch him spar. And there are a few guys down at GB Top Team as well that, are able to push him, you know what I mean? Mm. Like really good rounds that he gets. The other fight as well, of course, I'm excited about, just before we get onto the main card, is Mohamed Mokaev against Tim Elliott. Like Tim Elliott is a veteran. He's been around for a long time. He's got a really unusual style, but he makes it work for him. He kind of drifts between like Sandhagen, like switching stance heavy on his lead leg to kind of bouncing in and out a little bit. Great scrambles. Mokaev 9-0. Really
yes.
good. Great back taking, strong wrestling. Right at the beginning of his career, I feel like it could be a changing of the guard opportunity here for Mokaev.
But Mokaev needs to stop getting like in trouble.
In trouble?
Yeah, like that knee bar that he was in.
Oh, that was bad. That was like that. I thought he was gonna have to have a surgery after that, just based on the amount that his knee was bending.
Yeah,
he's super flexible.
He said he heard it like
yeah.
Ugh. Disgusting.
Yeah, but you just, you know.
I don't really think Tim Elliott has like an ACL though.
No.
that's the other thing. Like, if I had to choose a fighter who doesn't have an ACL, Tim Elliott would probably be up there.
So, let me have a quick look at the stats on this one. So, see, this has got Tapology and UFC stats have got the records different. Why is that? So, Tapology's got Tim Elliott at 19-12-1 and Mokaev at 9-0. And UFC stats, come on, has got Tim Elliott at 20-12-1. That'll be the ultimate fighter, won't it?
Mm.
And then Mokaev at 10-0 with one no contest. Anyway, both 5'7". Mokaev's got a 4-inch reach advantage. Can significantly less strikes landed per minute by Mokaev, but 10% more accuracy. Good striking defense by Mokaev. I don't know. I mean, I think this is going to be more about Mokaev kind of allowing Tim Elliott to establish a rhythm and then counter striking him as he tries to move in. Like, especially because he's going to require a bit of patience in this fight because Tim Elliott's going to be sharp shooting. He's very good at springing off the back foot and leaping into range with those like kind of slide by punches. the sooner Markayev gets his hands on him and gets behind him, I think the better. Mm. But he's got to be cautious closing range.
Especially because Tim Elliott just throws random stuff up the middle.
Yeah.
And he does that a little bit of that Dominic Cruz shifting side to side. And then it can kind of draw you into watching him.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of find yourself, not that I think Makhachev will do that. I feel like he wants to just go in, get a quick finish, be super impressive, you know, right off into the sunset, obviously. But, yeah, just be a bit cautious because he's so, sometimes with fighters who are more awkward, you have to be more cautious because they're not going to do the right things.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when you can get caught because it's like, oh, I didn't think that was even logical.
Yeah, you're setting him up for a counter cross and not thinking about the spinning back fist that he's decided he's going to throw next.
Yes.
Yeah.
The spot.
Yeah. For sure. There are a few things like if I was in Markayev's corner, I'd get him working that little step back that we saw Sean O'Malley catch Aljo with, because Tim Elliott can be quite heavy on his lead foot and he can kind of lean forward and leave himself open. And I think with Makhachev's speed and the reach advantage, he might be able to sting him at that range a little bit.
Yeah.
What he doesn't want to do is start level changing and Tim Elliott's just nowhere to be seen because his footwork, he's bumped off to the side and sprawled. You know, that would be really frustrating. I think like if he's gonna take him down, he's got to close him down first. Kind of maybe contain him up against the fence a little bit with some kicks and then grab a hold of him just so there's less opportunity for him to, you know, burst out and wriggle away. It could be a frustrating night for him if that happens. Okay, main card. Should we talk about main card? Right, so we're kicking off with Muin Gafarov against Saeed Nurmagomedov. So quick tale of the tape. So we've got, this is all UFC stats as well, so if it's not the same as Tapology, then I'm not taking the responsibility. So they've got Saeed Nurmagomedov 17-3 and Gafarov at 18-5. 1-inch height advantage for Nurmagomedov, 2-inch reach advantage. Slightly higher strikes landed per minute, slightly better striking accuracy, better striking defense. Generally, I mean, the stats lean towards Nurmagomedov generally in striking, but then they switch the opposite way for Gafarov. He's got a higher takedown average, a better takedown accuracy. Takedown defense is pretty much the same, but then Nurmagomedov balances it out with his sub-average.
Hmm.
I think Nurmagomedov's just going to try and keep this one on the feet and pick Gafarov off. You know, I think we saw a lot in Gafarov's last fight against Castaneda where Saeed Nurmagomedov will capitalize with his striking.
Yeah, especially because his opponent was a lot more present in the exchanges.
Yeah.
And
he was sharper, wasn't he? Castaneda.
No, the other one,
Gafarov.
Gafarov.
Yeah.
Gafarov was kind of like Poirier stance, throw a hook straight into. It was a bit too obvious what he wanted to do. And, you know, he got a point taken away because he was leading in with his head. And he did earlier in the fight and then complained to the referee when it was really him clashing heads, not his opponent. But I just feel like Castaneda stayed a bit more present in the fight, like looked a bit more into what. Yeah, you're welcome. You have amazing mugs.
Flowery mug.
To drink from, called Dog Rose.
Dog Rose. It's a beautiful flower and they called it Dog Rose. Anyway.
So yeah, like he's able to see these openings a lot more. His opponent was able to see it with him because he was so, oh, I'm just going to single mind. I'm going to get it to the ground, but not in a way where usually I feel like with the wrestlers, they'll have that approach where they get everybody down and they just smash everybody. And then the level gets a bit higher and then they'll try that same thing and get clipped with something. And then they go back and they're like, oh, well, this didn't work out. Now let me be more patient. And they start picking their shots a bit more. It seems like a phase within the thing that all of them have had, whether they have won or lost that fight. There has been a significant fight that has taught them that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't feel like Gafarov has had that yet.
Yeah.
Even though he lost the last fight, he could be like, oh, the point deduction. Or,
yeah. See, that's the thing, is he's got a lot of fights. He's had a lot of experience and he's picked up losses.
Mm.
So there have been opportunities for him, I'm sure, to be able to, I mean, you know, I'm sure he's, I'm sure he's had pretty much the same style the majority of the way through his career, and it's been effective against most people. Yeah. But he's now getting to the stage where he's going to have to adapt if he's going to have any success. Like, he's, what is his last two fights have been losses?
No, he lost, and then he won the one before. He had two wins and then a loss before that. So he lost his last one. Won by spinning back.
Two losses here on UFC stats. Have they got that wrong as well? Let me have a look.
No, because you went UFC Fight Night, right? He lost to Castaneda.
Oh, they've taken... Sorry. So UFC stats have not included these fights that weren't in the UFC. So they've just got him down as two losses. Yeah, sorry. So he was released after the Contender Series split decision loss. He went and stopped two people, Herbert Sousa and Diego Silva.
Technically not released because he didn't win the contract. It's Contender Series.
Well, okay, yeah. So, all right.
What?
You just bullied me today.
I'm not bullying you. I'm just... Hey, I'm just addressing it before everybody in the comment section types that out, and I have to go down to every comment and like it, and I don't want to keep seeing the same comment. Give me something entertaining.
Oh, so you're correcting me for the people in the comments, right?
Yes. So everybody watching it right now was like on their keyboard. They probably hate me now. They're like, I was going to type that. Took it away.
So
from
for
me.
All your complaints, send them to Veronica at Outlaw Picks Podcast. That is. Yeah, sorry. So he went away and he stopped two people, both on LFA, which is, you know, it's a good show. And the fighters that he was up against, they had good records. Like, combined records, they were, 30 and 8, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he stopped them second and third round, both with strikes.
Yeah, two spinning back kick knockouts.
Yeah, love it.
He has really good, like, single shot... like body shots, which he used against Castaneda. Like, sometimes when he would settle and he would land a solid shot, you could tell that it was heavy.
Yeah, there's not as much finesse to his movement as there was with Castaneda. Like, that's why I feel like Castaneda was able to get the better of him, not because he was like he had any more power, but because he was able to sting and move and switch his stance and just kind of give him different looks.
Yeah.
Whereas Gafarov tend to be a little bit kind of hunt and stalk and punch and wrestle. You know what I mean? It was... I just don't think that's a good matchup for Saeed Nurmagomedov because, well, first of all, I feel like his takedown defense is going to be good enough to be able to keep this one on the feet.
You mean for the other guy? It is a good matchup for Saeed.
Yeah, exactly. It's not... The style that we saw against Castaneda is not a good matchup
for him.
Okay. Against Saeed Nurmagomedov. So, yeah.
Okay.
Because Saeed Nurmagomedov, for me, is stronger on the feet. His striking is sharper.
It's like the Goldie. Dagestanian, but not primarily a wrestler. It's like a pile driver every time he is in the... His last name's Nurmagomedov, but he's not a wrestler. He prefers to strike.
Yeah, I always remember that.
We should know this by now.
Who was it he fought in Fight Island where he hit him with that ridge hand? Like proper, like long, straight. I can't remember who it was now.
Was it Ricardo Ramos?
No, I don't think so.
No, that wasn't...
No.
Left hook, Mark Sturgey?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Mark Striegel.
It was like a hook, but it was like a ridge hand. He caught him with the side of the glove. It was quite cool. But like, you look at his record. So he's like, he's stopping people with strikes. He's got 4 out of 17 wins are knockouts, and he's got 5 submissions. But if you look at the submissions, it's like ninja choke, guillotine chokes, things that are people level changing and him wrapping up and finishing
and
that way.
He's slick with them.
Yeah, exactly. And I can kind of see him, like my term that I use is bookending, do you know what I mean? Like, he's got him covered at this end of the game and he's got him covered at this end of the game. So no matter where Castaneda is fighting, if he's fighting at range, he's going to lose. And if he's trying to wrestle, he's going to get guillotined.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like that's generally the way that the matchup's going to play out. I can imagine Saeed Nurmagomedov being able to catch him and hurt him and wear him down over probably 10, 12 minutes and then maybe guillotine him in the end of the second, early third round.
I agree.
That's my prediction. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm going with Saeed.
Yeah. I mean,
by what?
I'm going to go with guillotine. I'm going to go with like a high elbow guillotine.
What round?
103 of the third.
Okay.
You laugh, but imagine, just imagine if at 103 of the third, Gafarov is tapping against Saeed Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, but you can't say that.
I'm just going to take this clip and I'm going to get Jamie to put some like zapping lightning. Here, Jamie, this is the clip to put the zzz, zzz, and I'll look like a genius.
Yeah.
Sometimes
if you
just
weren't
given
this whole explanation,
there. Look,
you had to say round three, 103. Look at the camera, straight face, and then go.
Oh, is that right?
Bam,
oh,
next
well.
One. Yeah, but if you give an explanation of
well,
in case it's a lucky
out.
Shot,
look, we can edit this bit out. It's fine. It's fine. We can fix it. It's gone, and we're back. And we're back. Look, right, okay.
We're not back. Jamie left it.
I remember that I was filming a breakdown show once for BT Sport and we sent them the file over. And you remember there was a mistake in it? Like, because I used to do those in one shot and I'd sat and I'd recorded this thing, sent it over to them. And there was just a bit right in the middle of the show where I just kind of made a mistake and I went, oh, you're like, oh. I had a drink and went and just kind of restarted that bit and they just left it in there. But yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. But that's what Jamie's going to do, isn't it? He's just going to leave this bit in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially now you've given him that evil training camp stare. That's the I'm hungry stare.
I'm not hungry. I had apple flapjack. Mama's eating good.
Yeah, yeah. But let me explain to you what she does, though, because
why?
She savors this. Oh, Andy, it's the Eminem story I forgot about.
If you say the Eminem story.
Not Eminem the rapper, as in the food. Anyway,
I'm tired and he just messes with me.
Look, I'm conditioning
you. Couldn't get bear clawed in the face.
Hey, I've got stats from training this morning from the mouth guard people that you kicked me in the head really hard.
Okay, you said, don't worry, I got the defense covered.
Well, I did.
Go harder.
I mean, I
and
was
And then
fine.
He complains about it.
I'm not complaining about it. I'm just, you know.
Trying to turn this into like a domestic abuse thing.
Well, I say it to the other guys. Me. I'm like, you're fine. You can let your punches go a little bit, and then they give it like another 20%. Whereas I say to you, yeah, you know, you can let it go. I've got it covered, and you're like, right. let's see how covered you are. Let's see how much of my foot I can wrap around the side of your head. No, it's fine. It's fine. We got good statistics on the mouth guard. Anyway, I'm talking about top secret stuff. I can't be saying these things.
You're still here, though, aren't you?
We're going to have to... What?
You're still here.
Still, I am just about...
Complain all I hear.
Just about. Okay. So next fight.
Yes.
Ikram Aliskarov.
Yes.
Against Wally Alves.
Yes.
Okay. Wally Alves is one of those kind of fighters that, like, he's a difficult fight. And no matter who gets the call up, like you've got Wally Alves, you're like, okay, so is he going to show up here and be an absolute murderer?
Is he going to train for this?
Right,
or
is he going to show up like, I'm going to win this fight?
Relax, man.
Somehow. Yeah, sometimes. Maybe that's it. Maybe he's just a little bit too, because he doesn't seem to be able to get momentum in the UFC. Like he came in with a good little streak. He had a few 18, finishes.
18,000 guillotines.
Yeah, like he started
Colby Cunnington guillotine.
Actually, he's got a ridiculous amount of guillotines. So he's got, hang on, so rear naked choke, guillotine, arm triangle, guillotine, TKO, guillotine, unanimous decision against Alan Joban. Respect Alan, tough dude. He was a good southpaw sparring partner for me back in the day. I was like, this guy's a model, he can't fight, and he can fight. He's got good jiu-jitsu as well. I was very surprised.
Did you
and
tell
he's good
him?
Looking. He's got everything.
Did you tell him, why are you doing this if you're so pretty?
He's an easy guy to dislike because he's got everything going for him. But then he's also such a nice guy. So you're like, well, I guess some people just get a great hand of cards at the table.
You're handsome, mate.
Like, ah, thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay. Nordin Taleb, another tough, very tough individual. Doesn't get the notoriety that he should. Guillotine choke against Colby Covington. That's a big win. And then Brian Barberena spoiling the party as he always does, pissing on the bonfire, raining on the parade. The spoiler,
with
Brian
like
Barberena.
A mullet.
Yeah, and then he loses a decision to Kamaru Usman. Now you look at it and you go, well, yeah, you know. But then he came back with two more wins. Then I picked up a loss to James Krause, he who shall not be named. I hope he's doing all right. I've always been a big fan of James Krause.
Nice.
Sergio Moraes, awkward, weird dude, great jiu-jitsu, really odd striking. Randy Brown, lost, arm triangle. Munir Lazez, body kicks and punches. Great performance.
He did like one body kick and then he kicked him again, but the other two were to the arm. But I feel like the guy had just... He was already going down.
It didn't matter. His ship was already sinking. and then you know, the loss to Jeremiah Wells and then a split decision against Nicholas Dalby. Like, I feel like he's got everything that he needs. He just needs to... I don't know whether it's like a change of scenery or a change of...
He's not even old.
No.
He's 32.
Exactly. Not even old.
He doesn't look 32, though.
That's from the Brian Barberena fight, I think.
Yeah, he looks significantly older. Yeah.
I think Brian Barberena steals people's youth when he's fighting them. I think that's how he... Because was it Sage Northcutt he was the spoiler of as well?
Yeah, I think so. He had a few of them.
He did, didn't he? Ba, 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 ba. I can't say his name and not think of the Beach Boys.
I just think, hey, Macarena.
That's weird. That's not the song I would think.
Listen, honestly, I don't know what's up with Barley. I feel, and I don't know him personally. I don't know anything, you know, personally about him. But I feel like sometimes he shows up and he's like, all right, I'm the best in the world.
Right.
And other times he cannot be asked.
It's the Vitor Belt situation.
He's like, I'm tired. Like,
he was the same.
Let's do it. Like Nicholas Dalby, I feel like, I don't know if he got tired of Nicholas just breathing next to him.
Nicholas Dalby's never going to stop. You were talking about that when you were watching the fight. You're like of all things to be bothered about, it's like, this guy's breathing too much.
How can you be thinking about what you're doing? You're breathing so loud.
So I know how to distract you next time we're doing wrestling.
No, but like, but it worked because he out cardioed him and he like out hustled him.
Yeah,
and
that's how he lost. He was Wim Hof breathing.
Yeah, it was like Alvi went to the, you know what, this is not one of my days. This is like good. All right, you got it, dude. You know, I'm sick of this. That's what it kind of felt like because Dalby was so like tenacious with his pace.
Yeah, he is very.
Like, but he's tricky, this dude.
Yeah, who? Dalby.
Alves.
Yes, he is.
Alves.
Yeah, because Alves. He's got everything he needs to be a really successful fighter, apart from the consistency bit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's just seems to be the bit that he's missing. And I don't know whether it's like a confidence thing or a preparation thing or what, but like, if there's anybody to get motivated for, it's a person with a record of 14-1 who's from Makhachkala, Russia.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, you know that doesn't matter who that person is, it's going to be a handful and you're going to have to work hard for every position and you're not going to be stopped. You're going to be pushed at every stage of the fight. I think this is a really, really rough fight for Alves. I think he might be picking up his third loss in a row here. Mm. Like, this guy's dangerous.
I feel like it's one of the biggest... Or on Tapology, the difference. I just need to stop real quick. I did not mean to like bully down beyond his breathing. It's great.
No.
It's like it's effective and it's awesome.
No, he's gonna be upset. I'm gonna have to call him. I'm gonna have to call him and speak to him and
care.
Say, look, like
he doesn't care. Hey. But I'm starting to like feel bad about it.
He's a very sensitive individual, Nicholas Dalby.
No, he's not. No, he like is. Honestly, dude, this is cool. I didn't mean to say it was no. Okay. All right. I'm okay. Back. But the difference on Tapology is 3% Alves, 97% Alirskarov.
What, for how people think the fight's going to go?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I've never seen, like, well, on this card, this has to be one of the biggest differences.
It's got to be.
That's crazy. Especially because Warley is, although he looks like he's like mid-40s, he's not, and he's tricky, and he might just show up like, you know what, I'm going to, all right, doesn't matter. Listen, Alirskarov.
Alirskarov. So one other thing that we need to consider as well is that this, because we've talked about this consistency with Warley, it might be down to his weight cut or his preparation or whatever. He's going up to middleweight for this one.
Hmm.
So we might see a different version of him. It might have been, we might go, oh, okay, maybe he was just really struggling with the weight cut and he has a really good streak at middleweight. He might surprise us. Like Anthony Smith did the same thing, didn't he? Like, he was a middleweight and it was like, he just didn't seem there at middleweight. And then he moved up to light heavyweight and he went on this on a streak and looked really good. I do think this is a really hard fight to move up into a weight class with, though, because this guy's got, he's got everything he needs. I mean, he's a strong, powerful individual with good striking. And it, yeah, so for a first run out with for Warley at a different weight class, like, has he been a middleweight before? Let me see if, let me have a quick look on his Wikipedia, and then we can get onto the next fight, which is going to be nuts.
Yeah. At least Groves, pressure that he's had, that he has when he fights, is ridiculous. The way he utilizes his hip and kind of just, he like.
So here's something interesting. I didn't notice this. My mistake. Warley Alves won the Ultimate Fighter Brazil 3 at middleweight. And of course, like, usually what happens is people win tough at the weight class above because they're having to fight so regularly, and then they move down when they. Becoming the UFC fighter. But like, it looks like he's done the same thing. It looks like he's done the same thing. But then he says, Alan Jabanic says a return to welterweight. I don't know. I think he's going to be a little bit undersized. I didn't do stats for this one, did I? Let's have a quick stats on this one and see what the size difference is, and then we'll see what your pick is. So 14-1 for Aliskarov. 15-6 for Warley Alves. 1-inch height advantage, 4-inch reach advantage for Aliskarov. Higher strikes landed per minute, better striking accuracy. Not as high striking defense, but of course Warley's had more UFC fights to look at. 80% takedown defense for Warley Alves. I don't know. I just kind of feel like Aliskarov might just be able to kind of...
Well, like Kimura him.
I don't know. Like, maybe.
Dude, his Kimuras are disgusting.
Yeah, they are.
He like grabs it and then pins it to you with the same kind of frame hold that you do to take somebody down, especially like that style. And then he just kind of goes like pit stop to pit stop, always applying pressure. Then gets his leg over your head. And it looks like he's going to chicken wing pop it out.
So he went armbar and guillotine in his early career. And then he, after his loss to Chimaev, which was April 2019, first round knockout, he then went on another 6-fight win streak and picked up 3 Kimuras in that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he might stop him with strikes. He's got five wins by knockout, 5 by submission.
Yeah, he has great targeting for kicks, and he applies that angle change to his striking like he does to his grappling. Mm. So it is...
Yeah, that knockout of Phil Hawes, he was completely switched off, wasn't he?
Yeah. He like touched it and found the mark with the other one, which is always disgusting when you're able to do that.
Well, I'm going to agree with, what is it, 97% of Tapology?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm afraid that I think it's a big ask for Warley Alves to step up to middleweight and beat this guy.
Mm.
Okay. Which way are you going? Did you make a pick?
No.
Go on then.
We don't care.
Oh, that's not
sad
true.
Sad violin.
Oh. Do, 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 do. Go on then. What's your pick?
Yeah, I'm picking Kimura.
We're not bothered. Okay.
Dude, I'm not cooking
nothing for you.
No, I am going to cook for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're going to like
it. Yeah, I'm going to steal your meal prep company food. I'm going to steal the Vortex Buffalo Chicken.
You're not
okay,
getting nothing.
I am. So what do you think? Are you thinking Kimura?
Yeah.
Yeah, are you?
I just think he's going to Kimura.
Which round? 1, 2, 3.
In the first round.
First round Kimura.
Yeah.
Mm. I think it's going to be like an early second round knockout.
Mm, okay, we'll see.
Mm. Maybe he'll be in a Kimura in the first round and it'll be really, really close and then he'll escape it and then get knocked out at the start of the second. So you'll have almost been right, but I'll have definitely been right.
That happens never.
Well, there's always a first time. Okay, this is a really interesting one. Magomed Ankalaev against Johnny Walker. Like this, I feel like this is a matchmaking gift. Like when they wrote this on the board at the UFC offices, they must have been like, yeah. Yeah, you're going to like this one. I mean, Ankalaev's scary. 18-1-1. Southpaw, like strategic, walks people down. The only time we saw him get a little bit excited was when Kutalaba tried to punk him and get him to draw in, and he almost bit on it. Mm-hmm. But he's normally very controlled, especially after that loss to Paul Craig. You know what I mean? It was like that must be seared in his brain. Like he might even go down to middleweight and chase Paul Craig just to get that one back. But Ankalaev against Johnny Walker is a really interesting fight. Really interesting. Johnny Walker settled down a lot since he's... is he still at SBG, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe so.
He seems to have settled down a lot there. Because, I mean, the thing is, right, he's very explosive. He's very creative. He's a really big athlete for this weight class. But the chaos sometimes was getting him in trouble. And we've seen him hurt a few times. Like, he doesn't... For whatever reason, he seems to take a punch really bad, but recovers really quickly, you know?
Overhand right.
Yeah. And the one other thing that we saw as well, which might be really useful for him in this fight, are those elbows. Who was it? Hang on a minute.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I can see the guy's face. Ryan Spann.
Yes.
Bang, bang. And then those hammer fists. That could be really useful for him in this fight. Because especially if he's being awkward with his movement, Ankalaev might be like, you know what, I'm going
to... Yeah. I also like his leg kicks that he's doing to the calf and to the leg. Because if you watch Jan Blachowicz versus Ankalaev, that's something that I feel like won him the first three rounds.
Yeah.
Just destroying the leg. And also kind of... Because when your leg's like that, it's so compromised. It's not, oh, I can't use it and that's it. It's not like it's a detached thing you put to the side. It is hurting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're having to deal with that and the fight in front of you. And Johnny Walker's really been digging into it. He just tends to return repeatedly to it, which I feel like Ankalaev might catch him when he does so with something like an overhand right, like Jamahal Hill did. But yeah.
Yeah.
Do the tail of the tape, mister.
Oh, I didn't do a tail of the tape. Sorry. Well remembered. It's kind of hard for me to figure out how Johnny Walker is going to approach this one, because like Ankalaev is just going to try and squeeze him up against the fence and take away as much of his movement as he can. And then he's got wrestling in his back pocket. So like really what it needs is good lateral movement from Johnny Walker and good counter punching, and to be a bit settled and quite busy and not do anything wildly explosive that's going to either give him options for counter punching or body locks and takedowns.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so tail of the tape. Ankalaev, 18-1-1. Johnny Walker, 21-7. Average fight time longer for Ankalaev. Bit more strategic, bit better pace. We've seen some really big knockouts, really fast from Johnny Walker. 3-inch height advantage for Johnny Walker and a 7-inch reach advantage. That's wild. 6'6", 82-inch reach. Big height and reach advantage. But again, it doesn't make a difference if he is squeezed up against the fence. He can make the most of that, but he's going to have to use his movement and his footwork to keep creating space for himself. Striking stats are fairly close as far as output. Slightly higher for Johnny Walker, slightly better striking accuracy, but more strikes absorbed per minute and a lower striking defense. As we said, we have seen him hurt a good few times.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like in this one, we're most likely going to see... I mean, I just don't expect Johnny Walker, unless he's made real leaps in his game, I don't expect him to try and grapple in this one. Like, the times when we've seen him struggle, was it to Nikita Krylov in Brasilia, was able to out-grapple him? Like, if Krylov could out-grapple him, he would have had to made big strides for...
I feel like he has made a lot of big strides.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when... especially when he's grappling against the fence... Like, he does a really good job at getting an underhook or a body lock and getting himself back up. Yeah.
I'm talking
and
more about
going
on the ground,
the back. Yeah, like straight ground.
If he's taken down, is it worth him kind of playing on the floor, or is it, you know what I mean? That's what I'm wondering. Because like my memory of Johnny Walker is, once he's taken down, he's not very good at getting back into good posture. But then if he's going to be working one thing at SBG HQ, then it's going to be that, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like his get-ups have gone so much better, like against Kutilaba. And I'm not saying Kutilaba's at that same grappling level. But Kutilaba has really good, you know, he's like from Moldova, has good wrestling, has taken people down to the ground and stuff. And he was able to get back up and sort of, he was just patient with his head movement and utilizing the fence to get that rear naked choke. And that's something that we've seen big improvements of Johnny Walker, is a little bit that patience that he has.
Yeah.
It's improved and you can see it in his game. And yeah, I feel like it's helped him massively. And I also felt like it took him a little bit to settle into SBG.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Because he was such a chaotic fighter. Sometimes when you just take that away, you take away a lot of
what makes that person who they are. Yeah, for sure.
But it's like one step back to make a few step forwards. And I feel like now he's only taking steps forward, which is cool.
Yeah. What's your prediction?
I think Ankalaev's
going to What decision? Or do you think he's going to be able to stop him in some way? What's his record distribution?
I think he's going to be like more inclined to try and stop him because he lost the fight for the belt as a draw. And he had Jan Błachowicz down for the fourth and fifth round. And he was just like, it was quite a lot of ground and pound, but not a lot of urgency to finish it. And obviously you don't want Błachowicz to get back up, your legs compromised, all these things. But I'm sure he might have thought,
Like,
oh, if I would have just went for the finish, if I was stapled to finish on, then that. Because ultimately, what he wants is a belt, right? So if you put on like a finish performance versus Johnny Walker, you're a lot closer to it.
Yeah.
It put him a step behind to have the fight as a draw.
Yeah.
Which is why they gave the belt.
Yeah. You know, I'd love to know what Ankalaev, or even if he's keeping a record of it, but what his total combat sports experience is. Because so what is he? He's had 20 fights in MMA pro, 18-1-1. But then you look at the rest of the things that he's done, like amateur MMA and combat sambo. So he got first place in 2013 at the MMA World Association, which you've got to imagine, you know, if it's open to him, it's going to be open to a good portion of even just Russian fighters that are going to be a high level. He took gold in that, silver the next year, and then gold the following 2 years. And then the Russian MMA Union, he took gold every year between 2014 and 2016. And then Combat Sambo, 2016, took gold in that as well. Like, you've got to imagine, he's probably had 100 amateur fights across those disciplines before he's even stepped into pro MMA.
Which is why you see him be so patient in that.
Yeah. Scary dude. Like I feel absolutely like this is a, you know, if they fought 10 times for the first time, I would imagine Ankalaev's gonna win probably 7 of them, you know, based on his footwork and his experience. But I don't know, I just kind of feel like he might get caught in this one. I think it's gonna take him, like, if he rematched Johnny Walker, I think he'd have a better chance after he'd spent a bit of time, or if he'd sparred with him.
Yeah.
But I think the way that Johnny Walker moves and the size of him, as well as probably a few tricks up the sleeve that John Cavan has downloaded into his game, I think he might catch him with something. This might see Johnny Walker return into like that vintage style where he's explosive and goes flying through the air with a knee.
Yeah.
But he doesn't do it like he's button mashing. He does it like he knows the combo on the pad. Du-du-du-du-du. You know what I mean? And he sets it up perfect.
Yeah. Usually when he's in front of his opponents, he gives them that impression that he's going to fly at them at any moment. And it makes him kind of like,
he keeps doing that with his eyebrows.
Yeah. Like, oh, no, don't do that. Calm.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm picking. I'm going to go with Johnny Walker.
Johnny Walker.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Johnny Walker. I think it's going to be something mad, like a flying knee. I think we're due him returning to that style of fighting.
Mm.
And you know, what's he on? He's on a 3-fight win streak now. So he's had a submission. He's had those hammer fists, the cross and the hammer fists against Paul Craig. I just feel like we're going to get something more explosive out of him this time around. And Ankalaev maybe level changing because he's not sure of his movement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Southpaw. You know what I mean? Yeah, interesting one that. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, co-main event. So co-main event originally was Paulo Costa, Khamzat Chimaev. Paulo Costa's out, although that would have been a really good fight. But I do feel like this changes it a lot. Kamaru Usman stepping in. Short notice, moving up a weight class. 20-3 against 12-0. What do you reckon?
Do the tail of the tape.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, it's good you reminded me, because I'm...
I'm just now being more vocal about it.
Oh, okay. for the people in the comments. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so Kamaru Usman, 20 wins and 3 losses. Khamzat Chimaev, 12 wins, no defeats. 2-inch height advantage for Khamzat Chimaev, 1-inch reach advantage for Kamaru Usman. Average fight time, of course, is considerably longer for Usman. He is a 25-minute fighter, 17:35 compared to 5:01 for Chimaev. And the only reason it's 5:01 is because of Gilbert Burns. Mm. Like, if you take that fight out, it's probably like down to 2 minutes. Fast worker, dangerous wrestler, comes in and grabs a hold of people and ragdolls them. He's very, very good at chaining his wrestling together, one after another, after another, after another, until they're broken down. And then he does the same thing with his submission attempts, one after another, after another, after another. Really dangerous individual, but I just don't know as he can do this same thing to Kamaru Usman. I feel like Usman, even though, you know, he's a bit older now, and like something I was talking about with the Sub Radio guys, you know, they were bringing up his age and his, you know, potential knee injuries and stuff. But I still think, even if it's just for that first 2 or 3 minutes, if he wrestles like nothing else and he's able to keep the fight on the feet, we might see Chimaev start to take that big breath and then start to walk forward into a boxing range. And then I think it's a coin toss, because they've both got good basic boxing. Mm. You know, they've both got good slight head movement, good boxing defense, crisp straight punching.
I've got a theory.
Oh, okay.
This is a theory that doesn't apply to the main event, because both of these fighters are coming in as short notice replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it doesn't apply to the main event.
Okay.
But for this, I feel like the fact that it's a short notice for Usman is actually better for him, because he's just, you can tell the guy's always in shape. He's not going to gas out. He's done 5 rounds. He knows what that is. You know, obviously not having to do a big weight cut will help him. And I'm not saying it's an easy fight at all, because Khamzat is, well, we've seen how good he is, and he's big.
Mm.
Like, he didn't make 175, and that's why the whole thing, he didn't fight Nate Diaz. Like, the whole point is he's now a little bit too big for it. Mm. And if it wasn't for Usman losing to Leon Edwards, then the is Khamzat fighting Usman next would have been a lot higher, you know, in the, obviously the belt's not on the line, but it would have been a lot more intriguing than it is now. And it's not because he lost to Leon. But I feel like Usman kind of needed a bit of a break, you know, like just a little bit of a chill out break. And that happens with fighters sometimes. There's just, you're going and you're going and you're going. You don't recover from injuries as good, and you don't do a whole bunch of things that help you better. And you're so far, you know, so like thinking the sport so much that you miss on things that you would see if you just step back a little bit.
Mm.
And that was something that, for example, John Jones was talking about to Israel, because Israel said he was going to take some time off. He was like, oh, those 3 years off was the best thing for my career. Because it's just like you're in the midst of it. It's a bit too much, especially with the media and everything and going on. And I don't think Kamaru's been in the gym like, oh, I'm going to learn all this thing. Obviously, I've seen him do like fashion shoots and other things. But I feel like that might give him a refreshed approach to this fight.
Yeah.
And I think it was Ali mentioning that he was for Usman to fight Bilal Muhammad, maybe. It was somebody like that. And he was like, well, I'm not, that's like a championship fight. We want championship money.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, if you're going to get me here, I've already won the belt and I've already defended it a whole bunch of times. I'm going to go to make money.
Mm. I think this is a good move for him. I think it's going to be healthier for him, especially at this age. You know, what is he, 30, 35? Hang on a minute, let me check. 36. So at this age, I think it's good for him to allow his body to be a little bit bigger and not keep forcing himself down. And it's championship weight, so it was always 170 as well.
Yeah, you know, 170.
You know he's walking around at over 200 pounds.
Yeah, for
sure. So he's still going to cut to make this weight. And I feel like he's gonna be less cautious at this weight with his gas tank. I mean, this is three rounds, and this is, you know, he's not going to have the same kind of weight cut, so he's not going to have to rely on his rehydration to bring him back to a state where he can compete hard for 25 minutes. I feel like it's a very, very different fight to Paulo Costa. Like, if I'm Chimaev coming in against Paulo Costa, I'm thinking, right, well, he's a big dude and he's going to be difficult to move around, but I don't want to really be dealing with him at punching range because that's most likely where he's going to be best. You know, even if he's not landing clean shots, he's got crisp technique, and if he's landing on the guard, it's still going to be heavy. So get inside, close him down and get on a body lock and just wear him out with that cycle of taking him down and holding him down and controlling the scramble, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like this is the opposite game plan. I feel like the smart thing to do with Usman, if you're Chimaev, is to stay at boxing range and establish a jab and kick the legs and then consider setting up the takedown once you've maybe done 2 or 3 minutes worth of work. Because like, even if then he starts wrestling 3 minutes in and he's able to take the fight down and take Usman's back and not finish him, he's not expended the energy at the start of the round.
Yeah.
Which means that if he fails his takedowns, he's now got 2 or 3 minutes to deal with Usman walking him down and power punching with confidence, because now he knows that Chimaev's a bit more tired. You know what I mean? And you just don't know what Usman's going to look like at 185. Like, he might want to come out and close range down and start power punching. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it would, what I think would be a benefit is to see Chimaev kind of start a bit more patient. Like, I mean, we watched the Kevin Holland fight the other day, didn't we, again? And he just pounces on him, like straight away pounces on him, like a tiger taking down an antelope.
Yeah, from the glove touch.
Yeah, well, not even. and Kevin Holland did a really good job of keeping the scramble moving to a point. But then even when Chimaev got onto the neck attack, like he was like, there was a desperation to finish. It was like, how quick can I do this? How quick can I do this? And I don't think that's the smart way to go with Usman.
Yeah, that's why I feel like Usman might, has a, like, my theory of this being good for him, because he hasn't had a giant training camp of thinking how much of a scary monster Hamzat Chimaev is.
Yeah.
You know, he's heard of him and like blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Until, you know, until we fight, let's see. Same like John Jones versus a Johnny Walker. Like, all right, let's see first. But now it's a short time. It's just going there and doing it. And if he's patient, he might be able to catch Chimaev trying to rush a finish. Because we saw him against Gilbert Burns get a little bit overly excited in the fight.
Yeah, and he did slow down and he was hurt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can just imagine that Usman establishing that jab and just bloodying up his nose and making his breathing difficult and just kind of managing the pace of the fight. Yeah, for sure I could see that.
But Hamzat has a disgusting jab.
He does have a disgusting when, jab.
Yes, like sometimes he's like swinging it and then he's like, no, wait, I'm just going to jab you. Bah. Like he did that to Ikram.
Yeah. Yeah.
That jab was nasty. Yeah. It just kind of like hit him in the nose / like chin and folded him in. And he does have that nice rear uppercut as well.
Mm.
And he just was bam, which is cool because a lot of the times against wrestlers, they try and like fake an uppercut, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't ever change, you're going to come into an uppercut. And then he's like, sprawl, you're going to come into an uppercut, or I'm going to level change and take you down.
Yeah.
So he like used that reverse thing against them, which is, it's awesome.
I mean, he's just like, aside from the Gilbert Burns fight, he's just rolling through people. You know, and especially because, so like, he came into the UFC undefeated. He was what, second round knockout, first round submission, first round knockout, first round submission to punches. That's never good, is it? 35 seconds, tap to strikes. Knockout, first round, that's against Aliskarov, who's on this card. Bravo choke, which is what he just won his fight against Kevin Holland with, and then he made his UFC debut. And then it was John Phillips, Reese McKee, where they landed like 2 strikes in and received 100 and something between them. And then he moved up to middleweight, and just that corkscrew pressure against Mershart was just perfect. Like, if you could draw a diagram of pressuring somebody into the fence and stopping them,
yeah,
like that was there was no wasted energy there at all. Really, really clever finish. Good pressure. Lined him up perfect. Single punch. Knocked him out. You know what I mean? It's just like what he's been able to do to people. The only person that's really caused him any problems was Gilbert Burns, and that was because he was able to... I mean, I think there were two things. I think, first of all, Gilbert Burns is physically very strong and difficult to handle in the grappling range, in any range, just because he's got a good fundamental understanding of grappling. And then second of all, he's got really heavy kicks. And there were a few times where he was hammering that kick to the body.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
To the leg as well.
Yeah, yeah. But I think to the body, I think that's what softened Chimaev up a little bit and gassed him a bit. So like if I'm Usman, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, okay, I need to put him in that state and then I can win this fight in either range. But until he's in that state, he's an absolute nightmare. And while ever he's in that state, I'm going to have to expect to be on the back foot.
Yeah. Plus the pressure Chimaev must be on to in this fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
which way are you going?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know. I'm not sure, if I'm honest. I'm actually leaning towards Usman. I haven't talked it out and had this conversation, and I did the war room, and I chatted with the sub-radio guys last night. So I've kind of talked through the main and co-main event a little bit and kind of heard my own arguments out mm-hmm. loud. Like I'm thinking, I don't know whether I'm going to see... I don't know if I'm going to see it the same, the kind of control out of Chimaev that he needs to overcome someone like Usman, because I don't think he can do what he did to Kevin Holland to Usman.
Man, but it is crazy being like Chimaev. Like, I've seen Usman walk around and people, you know, will like, you know, say hello to him and stuff and be like, oh. But when in London, when Hamzat walked out, there needed to be like 20 security guards to stop from people, and they're going, and like crazy. I've never seen anything like it.
He's a superstar, isn't he? He's I don't know. I feel like he's had such strong performances all the way through. But like, I mean, even I'm just looking at his record now. Even you watch the Jack Hermanson fight, wrestling match, like. Hermanson's not, his primary skill set isn't really wrestling. He's a really awkward striker with really good ground and pound, right? He's got good top pressure, but like, you don't necessarily think of him as a wrestler. Like, a lot of his takedowns are kind of trips and spins and stuff. Even in that matchup, there were moments where Chimaev, like, he just looked a little bit labored from the wrestling exchanges. And I feel like Usman's got the wrestling and he's not having the big weight cut down to 170, so he's not having to do the big refuel. So he's going to come in a lot fresher than he normally feels, probably 195, 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And he's got 5 minutes in the gas tank to wrestle hard. I feel confident, even if he's got knee injuries. Because he knows if he gets through that first round and he gets those big deep breaths out of Chimaev and he starts to land on his heel with his front foot like he was against Gilbert Burns, I'm like, here we go. I've got him where I need him now.
I just wonder if he still has the same confidence that he was able to knock out Masvidal with. You know?
But he's taken this fight. I mean, I think that's a statement of confidence.
Yeah, it is a statement of confidence, but it can also be a statement of how much money you're going to give me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of either or.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Usman wouldn't take a fight unless he was confident he was going to win.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think this is what I said. This is what I was thinking when you were talking about the benefit of Usman not doing a training camp, because he's not had all this time to think about how scary Chimaev is.
Mm.
But that's based on the assumption that Usman looks at him and thinks he's a challenge, right? Because Usman's perspective of a fighter like Chimaev might be very different. Like, I'd look at Chimaev and go, holy moly, like he would take me down, tie my wrist up, elbow me into the canvas. You know what I mean? Like, it would be a nightmare to fight him. But then Usman must look at him and go, well, he can do this, but I can do this. And he's going to do this, but I can do this. And he rushes things because he's only 12 fights into his career. And like, Usman might have a completely different perspective of him. So when the call came through, it's like, do you want to fight Chimaev? He's like, yeah. And at middleweight, sign me up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He might see this as the Floyd Mayweather Canelo situation.
Yeah, getting
right
before.
Like, get him now. Like, put a loss on his record that everyone will go be able to look back to and go, ah, yeah, but Mayweather beat him.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the same as, for example, Islam has. And the same as, what was it, Alex Hernandez has over, like, Benil Dariush.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what?
Yes, it's, yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards Usman, if I'm honest. I feel like he might be able to weather an early storm in the first 4 or 5 minutes and then establish his jab and just kind of sit at a steady pace of like, this is what, just 15 minutes. Mm. Perfect. I'm picking Usman by decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can honestly see it, but I'm going to pick Hamza.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think that's the logical choice. What does Tapology say? I think that's the logical choice, but I don't know. I like the wild card.
75 Chimaev, 25 yeah. Usman.
I like the wild card in this one. I like the experience and the fact that he's moving up a weight class on short notice. It's the Bisping effect when he won the belt off Rockhold, isn't it? You know what I mean? Walked off a movie set and into the octagon and took the belt.
This next one. All right.
So main event.
Main event.
Okay.
The Tapology on this, though, is 45% Volkanovski, 55% Makhachev.
Is it
even
really?
Though they both took the fight on the same amount of short notice and they're up a weight class.
Mm.
Crazy.
That's interesting. I wonder what it was before the fight was remade with Volk. I wonder if people were as split as that on the Charles Oliveira one. Is it there?
Yeah, I could probably check it. Let me see. Do the teletape and I'll check it.
Do the teletape. Do the teletape.
All right, before you do it. Oliveira, 41, Makhachev, 59.
Okay. So slightly more in favor of Volkanovski winning it then. What is he at 45%, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
And then on their last fight, it was 66% Makhachev, 34% Volkanovski. Mm. So now more people, obviously this is a lot less amount of predictions because this one has 5,263 and the other one's like 1,400. Mm. So it might change, you know, like closer to the fight. But that's significantly giving him an 11% more credit for maybe winning.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Especially because, you know, Usman is doing kind of the same thing.
I didn't grab my notepad. Yeah, no, for sure. I think this is a different situation. Like I watched this back a few times. Like we've talked about this a little bit already, haven't we, this? Because I sat and watched it twice and scored it both times. And I felt the same both times. Let me do stats first. So Makhachev's 24-1, Alexander Volkanovski 26-2. 4-inch height advantage for Makhachev, 1-inch reach advantage for Volkanovski. Same thing with Chimaev and Usman. Height advantage one side, reach advantage on the other. Wingspan, wide back, wide shoulders. You know, that's what Volk and Usman are bringing to the table. Anyway, what was I saying? So I had the last fight. First four rounds to Makhachev, I scored the last round for Volkanovski.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of rounds in there that were close rounds. Second and third round were close rounds. First round was a clear 10-9 for me to Makhachev based on the fact that he landed that kind of forearm shot and put Volk down on one knee and then was able to take him down. Second and third round were a little bit closer. Second round, Volk was doing some really nice things with that right hook to the body and with the inside low kick. But, and again, I'm watching it in hindsight, I still felt like Makhachev did better work and landed better shots. So like I had Makhachev winning up until the very last round when he tried a couple of takedowns. Volkanovski scrambled really well and then pressured him. And then hurt him with that right hand.
Hmm.
So then I'm going that last round for Volkanovski. And there were good moments in it, you know, where he was defending the neck attack and stuff, but he still had Makhachev on his back. You know, he was still losing in that position, even if he was smiling to the cameras and punching him in the face.
Yeah, but also when you're watching it with a crowd
that was very pro-Volkanovski.
Exactly, yeah. was like going for Volkanovski. And now we're going to watch it in a crowd very pro-Makhachev.
Yeah.
So that's like a big difference. Mm.
I think Makhachev is going to look far more dominant this time around. I think he's going to have taken... Like the thing is as well, he was training for Charles Oliveira, who is an unpredictable nightmare on the feet and an unpredictable nightmare on the ground, right? I don't feel like Volkanovski presents as many problems. The problems that he presents are serious problems to deal with, but I feel like Makhachev already dealt with them.
Yeah.
Right? Like we were talking about at the gym today, when he travels through range, he was running straight into a tie clinch, or he was running straight into a punch, or running straight into a level change at times.
Yeah, and that's also because Islam is now a lot more patient. Mm. And this is one of the fighters that I mean that knockout that he received changed everything.
Yeah, for sure.
And he became so much more patient, and it made him a better fighter for it. Mm. And because he's had that, and I don't know how much it affected him being, you know, in Australia when he fought Volkanovski, but he was just kind of, what do you call that when they let the clay play go and you shoot it?
Yeah, clay pigeon shooting.
Yes. He was kind of doing that to his head.
yeah, he was a little bit. Like sniping him a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like trying to see, instead of thinking about covering the distance, because that was kind of what Volkanovski was doing, right? Covering the distance and landing his shots to get out of the way and stuff. He was just, I know that you're coming to me, so I'm just going to wait and, you know, Sparta 300, bam.
Exactly.
Bam into me.
Bam. He was just, yeah, he had his timing down. And that, you know, and I feel like this time around, especially with the experience of the fifth round, we're going to see a much more calculated Makhachev. I think they probably straight away, before even Charles Oliveira and this matchup was even a thing, they'd already gone over the Volkanovski fight and pulled it apart, pulled the training camp apart, right? That you shouldn't have done this in this position. This is instead of this and blah, blah, blah.
Because this was the one that Khabib wasn't in it, right? Mm-hmm. And then Khabib had, I think he had told him like, oh, you should have done all these things. And he replied like, well, you should have been there to tell me these things. So you can tell that they, like, that's to me tells me they definitely did that.
Yeah, for sure. I bet you got some good notes off Khabib.
Yeah.
I'm picking Makhachev.
I wish Volkanovski just had more time.
Yeah.
This is...
I wish we all had more time, but it's the state of affairs, isn't it?
Yeah, but, like, unfair for this fight to be such a short notice for him because he's already lost once.
It doesn't matter, though, does it?
Yes,
because
it does.
It doesn't, because it's the UFC, like, so it...
The UFC could, you know, play whatever narrative they want.
Of course they can, but at the same time, everyone is going to remember that Volkanovski stepped up on 2 weeks' notice after having a surgery, what, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
Stepped up on short notice, stepped in to fight Makhachev again, even though the last fight was an incredibly difficult five-round affair. Like, the respect that comes with that makes this decision that he's made unforgettable.
For sure.
Even if he loses by first round stoppage, of course he does. But he's won 26 times. If he loses a third time, it's not the end of the world, and it's not his weight class. And he's taken it on short notice, so there's no pressure. Like, I agree with you. I think he has the same benefits that Kamaru Usman does coming in.
I know, but he has... I feel like he can be double champ. I feel like if he really had like a good game plan, he could apply as much pressure as he would need to beat Makhachev or get a lot closer than he was in his last fight.
So why can't he benefit from not having a full training camp where he's been going over this and going over it in his mind? He's been doing it far more casually, which is probably more beneficial because there's not the anxiety associated with it.
Because Makhachev is not the same. Like,
no, he's not. So how can you prepare for him?
No. What I'm saying is, like, fighting Makhachev is not the same as fighting Chimaev.
No.
Because Makhachev is a lot more mature in the way that he fights because he's had more fights and he's had that, like, one learning fight. So he's a lot more of a composed, complete fighter.
Lethal, yeah, for sure.
Like...
Yeah, that's why I think he's going to
win. Straight mind.
Yeah, that's why I think he's going to win.
I know, me too. But I would like to not pick against Volkanovski because I really like Volkanovski.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But
I feel like I could make a more, you know, I could pick for Volkanovski had he had a bit more training time for him.
For sure. But what have we also learned from watching Volkanovski this week?
That he's a badass.
Yeah, he's a badass, yeah. But you can also pick up bad habits from him and the bad habits that if you watch him fight Makhachev, he paid for those bad habits.
Yeah.
Right? Look, Volkanovski is an incredible fighter. And at featherweight, I think he can hold onto that belt for as long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah. Also, it makes me a bit annoyed that Ilya's going to fight Max Holloway for the interim belt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't they just give an interim belt to somebody at the 145 and then he come in and, like, you know, like, flatten him out?
Yeah.
Why were you just going to give another interim?
Well, because, you know, posters.
Yeah. But, like, that's disrespectful. You can't I'm taking this fight on a short notice to save your card, because if not, who is Makachev going to fight that is going to be as exciting?
Yeah.
And then, as a thank you, you make an interim belt at my weight class.
Yeah, but it's just drama, isn't it? You know? It's just drama. He doesn't care. I understand what you're saying. I'm not a big fan of interim belts generally.
Yeah, but I'm just annoyed for Volkanovski.
Oh, yeah. More annoyed than he probably is.
Yeah, probably. Well, I'm a fan. I can do what I want.
So you're going for Makachev, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How? Decision or stoppage?
I think stoppage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you think? Like third round or something.
Yeah, with what? TKO or submission?
I think he might like Kimura him.
A Kimura. You're in a Kimura
mode.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, what did he have surgery on? Was it an elbow?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not a good sign, is it?
Exactly. Oh. Well, I know that's a shoulder lock, but
I know,
still.
But still. You don't want someone twisting on it if you just had an elbow surgery.
Exactly. Plus, he had that nasty Kimura against Dan Hooker. Mm. Maybe he's just going to do it to Volkanovski. Although, Dan Hooker has like a longer body for
him. He does have a longer body.
But Volkanovski has really long arms. Mm. But his head is like, I just feel like if you pressed his head against anywhere, it would hurt. I know. He looks like he just has like an extra hard edge.
For sure. And he's got that rough stubble as well, which gives you friction burns when he's using head position. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I bet he's an absolute nightmare. But I think Makachev gets it done. And I can see him either finishing him with that rear naked choke or flattening him out from top position on his back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like taking his back, hooks in, flattening him out.
After I hope to one day train with Volkanovski. I hope Volkanovski doesn't watch this. And then he's like,
I think he's got better things to do, if I'm honest.
When I go to train with him, he's going to be like,
most
you chose
of you have
Makachev.
Got better things to do. You're still sitting there an hour in, you're like, oh my goodness, I've got like washing up to hang. And
it's better than Instagram scrolling. Come on, I'm funny.
It depends. It depends. There's a lot of good dog videos on Instagram. They suck me in.
Yeah, that's like, when I know you're watching a dog video, when you're like smiling.
When I'm smiling. It's the only time I smile
like
these days.
Like a dorky smile. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Peace.
Is that it? Is that it? They close the show with that. Peace. You can leave now.
You said everyone's got better things to do. They got better things than to listen to us outro this.
I've just realised it's 6:15 and I've not eaten yet. So I think it might be time to get me some food. I'm gonna wait until you're cooking one of the Vortex meals and then eat my meal at the same time so I can smell the buffalo chicken and eat my bean toast and like, oh yeah, but you know,
a bit I'll
use the imagination.
Good food, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've probably got something wonderful to eat.
I do.
Yeah.
Peace.
Enjoy the fights. We'll see you next time.